Clint Sterner. Look at Sterner.
95.7 The Fan presents...
Clint Sterner is the last man standing. Now, who is Clint Sterner?
His two strongest strengths, he's competitive and he's smart.
Dive into the mind of former NFL quarterback Clint Sterner.
I'm going to put my hands on this bathroom counter and see if I can't twerk a little bit, see what it looks like, see what it feels like.
The Drive is live for Dirty's Daily.
Dirty's Daily is powered by, I don't know if it's called TASC or if it's just the letters T-A-S-C, but that clothing line, boys, it's the t-shirts I should go with. The clothing lines, I think, is geared heavily towards women, even though there are a lot of men's polos and sweatpants. It's athletic wear, right? It's athletic wear. But, boys, you might see me wearing them pretty often. TASC, I slid on by the location today, Ron, on the way in. Picked up 3-4 more shirts. Yeah, you know when you buy a t-shirt, man, you buy a t-shirt and you just, I'm a big t-shirt guy. When you buy a t-shirt and it fits right, you always look back and go, damn, I should have bought 2-3 of them.
One of those, yeah.
Yeah, well, I went and got a couple more colors today, man. So, I doubled up on the white. My white one's getting a little dingy, so I got me a good clean white one and then changed two other colors. By the way, Tyler, I did consider, buying you that one with that A&M logo on the chest of it, but they didn't have your size.
Well,
they didn't have your size hanging up. Now they may have had it in a box somewhere.
Yeah,
but I didn't ask.
Well, I appreciate
my effort
the thought,
was minimal,
man.
But the thought was definitely there.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
I told you, you got to go by and get it, man. They do have. She must be an Aggie because they do have A&M. That's the only school represented in the whole building. But TASC Athletic Wear. I know one of the locations over by. Over by Tecova's boot store over in Rice Village. So, anyway, big fan of the shirts.
I got to get over to Rice Village more.
Shirts are tremendous. I mean, you ain't going to find too many bargains over there.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I mean, this is a little different deal. Yeah, you better be ready now.
Show's
Tangers
out.
Tangers it is.
Oh, the Texans had a little joint practice today. Final live action, if you will. It wasn't completely live, but the final closest to live action that the starters are going to get before they square off in a couple of weeks against the Buffalo Bills, the joint practice against the Carolina Panthers, they absolutely dominated. And if you listen to D'Amico Ryans, he puts it nicely. He thanks them for their hospitality. And if you listen to Dave Canales, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers,
we got to go back to the drum board.
Yeah, we got to be able to compete with teams like the Texans if we're gonna get where we want to get. And so he even reverted back to the first couple of weeks of training camp to find some good, and then circled back and told them how bad it was today. And it wasn't evident today that they've had a good camp. And you know, again, they got to be able to compete with the teams like the Texans. So obviously, as a Texans fan, we should be really proud. They went over to the East Coast, if you will, and really, really put on a show. And the big names stood out. Bullock had a couple interceptions. I know Danielle Hunter had a handful of sacks, literally damn near five. Will Anderson was a problem all day long, apparently. And our offense shined as well. Very efficient. D'Amico Ryans was happy about the communication piece, being able to stand back and hear his team communicate in the way that they've been searching for. The O-line was really, really good. The running backs were really good. And there's a couple of things that we need to address here. One of them is my football horny audio from D'Amico Ryans, and one of them is something that's flown under the radar a little bit. But could end up being a much bigger play here, a much bigger piece for the Texans offense than we once thought. I'll give you a hint. To start training camp, this guy was arguably the most disappointing player, and he's somehow become very important. Number one, though, let me start with this. I've said this before training camp that I thought the X factor, the guy that was going to take the next step and become a big part of the offense and a guy that would be an X factor and kind of giving this offense a chance to take the next step, I thought would be Jalen Noel. Noel was injured, which I didn't know at the time. He was injured and has been injured for the majority of training camp. Jaden Higgins obviously stepped up and balled out and took that position of the move receiver in this offense and was really running with it. Well, he gets injured, so the opportunity presents itself. It just so happens the day after he gets injured, or maybe it was the day. But anyway, Jalen Noel comes back. And I think we talked about it yesterday, Ron. Where does Jalen Noel fit in this offense? My thought was, hell, I hope he's the move guy. I hope he can handle that workload and handle that position, because that's where he fits. Now, the reality of it is he could have landed anywhere. They want receivers all over the place to be able to do all things. So D'Amico Ryans talking about Jalen Noel. This is my football horny here, folks. D'Amico Ryans talking about Jalen Noel after practice today was exactly what I've been hoping to hear, because this kid's got the skill set, and I believe he's got the ability to take this offense to the next level. Here's D'Amico talking about Jalen Noel, wide receiver, second-year wide receiver out of Iowa State.
Yeah, Jalen does a great job playing the F position, moving around, you know, a lot in the slot, giving us the option to move guys around, make defenses have to communicate. That's where Jalen provides that for us, and he's done a great job of punt returning. You know, last year was his first time doing it for us. He got better. He grew as the year went along, so I'm expecting him to pick up where he left off and continue to improve as our punt returner as well.
I like the punt returner piece. That's where I think you first fans really have seen him excel, and if you play close attention, even on the ones that aren't great returns, they're still characteristics of a guy that's dynamic with the ball in his hands, right? But to hear, Ron, just simply that, because we've heard D'Amico do this, right, of hey, man, he's just next man up. He's just another receiver in the group, and he's got to do all things, and he's got to play all positions, and he's got to be able to block and be grimy and physical. To hear D'Amico Ryans get really specific about what Jalen Noel is doing and really what he wants him to be able to do, what he allows this offense to do, being that move guy, Ron, that is exactly what I wanted to hear. I think from a skill set perspective, he is a perfect fit. I think from just an overall, the ability to, as I've said before, now we see it a lot in the longer, the deeper passes that he's caught. But the chemistry that he clear, the natural chemistry that he has, it's quarterback friendly. The natural chemistry that he has with the quarterback, Ron, when he's playing that position, should maximize that dynamic of this offense, man. I'm excited to see Jalen Noel in that role.
Well, I knew you would like what he had to say, because in particular, as he talked about, he allows us to be able to move guys around, not just himself, but move guys around, and forces the defense to communicate. And yeah. I know that is something that you have despised over the years, that the Texans don't use enough motion, enough something to make the defense have to adjust, talk something, potentially miss, a coverage or something. And it's good to hear that they're thinking that. Yeah. You would assume that maybe Higgins was playing that space and that role.
Yeah.
But now it looks like they may be going that way with him.
I'll be clear. I mean, there is a, just to nerd out on football a little bit, there is a big difference between a shift is a movement that everybody resets again. The Texans do a lot of that, right? When I'm talking about movement, right, I'm talking about he's on the move when the ball is snapped. Right. So what you do is you take Nico Collins from the boundary and you put him to the field. You cut his split a little bit. You put Noel outside. The defense has got to make one call. He motions inside of Nico. Because he's motioning inside of Nico with a cut split, now the defense has to make another call. They got to figure out how they're going to handle a cut split with one of the best receivers in football. Right. So that's what he means by moving guys around. But to be clear, The I'm looking for motions. I want to see motions. I want to see things that create free releases. I want to see things that you are snapping the ball literally as the defense is making a call. If you just move and they make another call and then you sit there for 3 seconds, you've really not accomplished much, right? But I'm talking about the on-the-move stuff. I think Jalen Noel, because then he can change directions, right? Then he can stop and go. He can accelerate, decelerate where he really – it thrives and where what he's really, really good at. And so that's what I'm looking for. And I hope that is exactly what D'Amico Ryans is talking about. But nonetheless, at least he's talking about Jalen Noel being a move guy, creating matchup problems and making the defense communicate. Please, thank you. That is everything that I want out of Jalen Noel at this point. If he's doing that 2 weeks before you play, or 3 weeks, but 2 weeks before you play, the Buffalo Bills, then he can damn sure be full go, full tilt, offense wide open with him in that role by the time you play Buffalo. So I love that. Another one, D'Amico Ryans. Now, one thing that did happen in training camp to, in the joint practice today was newly acquired, I say newly this year, Braden Smith, the tackle out of the Indianapolis Colts organization. He comes over, 2-year deal, I think $24-25 million, a good chunk guaranteed, expected to be your plug and play right tackle. Looks like he's been beat out by Trent Brown. Yeah. So he was a depth piece at this point. I think if the season started today, he goes down with, I think what's being reported of the most recent is an ankle sprain, right? But apparently it may be a little bit worse. Is it a foot? I saw something in the break a while ago that said sprain. I didn't have time to check the timestamp, so it could have been old. But nonetheless, a lower leg injury that took him out of practice. He was carted off today. And obviously, had he been the starter over Trent Brown, that would have been a bigger problem. But it does create a depth problem, Ron. And that's why this next piece of audio is important. Blake Fisher, right? A guy that if you follow the team from a depth perspective, you know he was the jumbo tight end last year, the sixth offensive lineman that came in last year. I'll be honest with you. I'm a little higher on Blake Fisher, just big picture, because I mean, I don't think he's ever gone in a game and just been like, what the hell is going on? Like a four quarter problem, like he's overwhelmed. Now, he hadn't been great at times, but I didn't ever look at him as a damn outcast, but boy, early in training camp, Ron, apparently it was bad, right? I mean, it was rough. Mini camp rough, OTAs rough, training camp rough. Well, it's been really, really good, and apparently he was really, really good again today. And the reason it's important, because Braden Smith goes down, right? You now have a true swing tackle. We've seen Blake Fisher play right tackle and left tackle, so it's absolutely paramount that he that he plays well,
yeah,
right, and that he can contribute to this team. Well, good news, Houston. Here's D'Amico Ryans on Blake Fisher and how much he's improved and how good he's been of late.
For Blake, I've seen definitely a focused guy. He's improved a ton. If I gave out awards, he would get the award for the most improved offensive lineman this year. Just from what he did last year, from being in that jumbo type role, like he's just lined up at left tackle every day. He's gotten better every single day, and I'm really pleased with Blake. I'm proud of the work that he's put in. He's shown up daily. He's improved. He's taking the coaching really well, and that's what it looks like. Right, when you put the work in, you can get better, and Blake has shown that tremendously.
Well, and here's the timing couldn't be any better with obviously the struggles at depth tackle right now. But here's the beauty of it, right? When you talk about Blake Fisher, again, this is a swing tackle, right? He can play left or right. And I don't know that he's better one place or the other, right? He's a good depth swing tackle, right? The other piece, Ron, that I think is very important is, yes, I think when you look at Trent Brown and Arionte Ursary, the tackles that are their starting tackles, clearly you're going to lose a little something in the run game if Blake Fisher has to play either or. Right, he's not the run blocker that either one of those guys are currently or will be when the time comes. But what he does do is give you a capable pass protecting tackle. Right, he's more athletic than both of those guys. He's got really, really good feet. He's lighter in the tail, obviously, so he moves better. And I think when you insert a backup tackle in the game, the first thought is, boy, he's going to get ran through in pass protection.
Yeah,
right? And I'm not saying he's Laremy Tunsil. I'm just saying you got a swing tackle that can protect decently on both ends. And so if he has to go in the game, it's not like you worry about your quarterback safety. A lot of times a backup tackle goes in and you're like, boy, I hope that blind side's taken care of.
Yeah, he gets – my man D'Amico handing out awards.
Yeah,
baby. He said, man, he's most improved. Yeah. There you go. I think so many people look at Blake Fisher, and hell, I'm probably one of them at times, and just think about Blake Fisher for the Blake Fisher you have remembered years before.
Yeah.
Or the 2 years before, or hell, even Blake Fisher in the preseason game against the Vikings last year where it really seemed like he was leaking oil. And the struggles of, man, they didn't relegate this cat who was a second-round draft pick when Cam Robinson is out and he can't go, and they bring in Trent Brown, who's halfway injured, and then they leave Trent Brown out, and then they they got to move Titus and move all this stuff, and he has never been one that they were putting in at tackle. He was just staying in as that jumbo set guy. And there was, like, you could tell, like, he probably wasn't somebody that you wanted to be a starting tackle on the team. And I think that's the view that people have for Blake Fisher. I think it's time that you can, with new evidence, as hard as it is at times, to view him for what he is right now. And I'll be just honest, the times I've been out there, it has not been that big of a difference between, like, him and Braden Smith.
Oh, no, I completely agree with that.
You know what I mean? Like, not in the mindset that you would think, all right, they brought in this veteran who's been a right tackle. Like, no, I watched him against Max Crosby. Braden Smith never faced Max Crosby that day. I watched him against Max Crosby, and, yeah, he got beat by an all-pro at a couple of times, but he held his own. Yeah. He did. So he has looked a lot better than he has been before, and I do think what D'Amico was saying based off what we've seen is accurate. So he's not the guy that I think a lot of people in their minds remember when they see 57.
Well, you think about it with Blake Fisher appearing to be your depth tackle again, Ron. He can play either side, so he's a swing tackle. Right, he's athletic and agile and fleet of foot. So you assume he's going to be okay in pass protection. You don't really worry about that piece. And also, we're back to, if he is in a spot to make this team and be active on Sundays, then now guess what's back in play? The old sixth offensive lineman, baby, big fish in the game.
And maybe he's a better version of it.
What do you think they call that person? You think they call it Big Fish?
He's got to be. Yeah. Oh, that package.
Oh, yeah. Big Fish. It's some kind of big fish name, right? Tuna? Yeah, Marlin?
Tuna, yeah.
But what would you go with? Would you go with shark? Would you go with some?
Sea bass. Kick his ass, sea bass.
Hey, why'd you say it with a list, though? You see how he said that?
Sea bass.
He said that real sassy right there, T.
Coming up, I wanted to I had a real big epiphany watching the Astros last night, and I do want to talk about this, but then it's just pissed me off because the lineup came out, and it just absolutely throws cold water on the entire conversation that I want to have, because damn it, Joe, why? We'll discuss that. Coming up next.
95.7 The Fan presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back as we are live here in The Drive. Coming up here in a few minutes, the bottom of the hour, our guy Brandon Scott joins us. We'll get his thoughts as the Texans have one more preseason game left. And I know he is somebody who is completely invested into the Houston Astros. I know he is watching them every night. And living and dying with them, just like he did when they were in the golden era.
Holla at your boy.
I know he is. So, but we'll talk to him coming up here in the next 10 minutes or so. But, Clint, I did, man. Yiner had himself a big night last night. Two homers. Drove in another run late. What do you have, 10 total bases last night? I think his OPS jumped up 40 points last night. He had a big game. Here's your starting lineups today, guys. As the Astros are now in first place by a half a game. Pena leading off. Yordan Alvarez is the DH. Paredes is behind him. Altuve. Varsho had him a couple of hits, drove in some runs. He's in the lineup again. He's in there. Christian Walker. Behind him, Taylor Trammell, Cam Smith, big triple last night. And catching tonight, Christian Vasquez.
Who's catching?
Christian Vasquez.
Come on, Joe!
Listen, I don't know. I don't care where you play him. I mean, we got to ride that. We got to ride that Yiner Diaz train one more time at the bottom of the order. Somewhere. So we got to ride it. I don't care. All right, if Peter is so comfortable with him, then maybe today is the day, and I can't believe I'm saying it, but today's the day that maybe we give Yordan a night in left field, and maybe Yiner's the DH.
Is that my boy Ron?
I'm sorry. Anybody out of the top four gives you 10 total bases and multiple home runs in a game, they play the next day.
Yeah, you might want to think he's seeing it pretty well in that park. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. This is an overthink.
Come on, Joe.
This is an overthink, boys. Once again, you would think that that little meeting with Jim Crane yesterday maybe would have changed some of this. You'd think that maybe some of this would have left the building with Dana Brown, but clearly it didn't.
We've got to change the best I can.
It's
we
Joe.
We got to change the plan. I don't care if this was the plan walking in to the start of this series. No, we got to change the plan here.
That ain't good enough.
Taylor's got to be a late game
scratch
replacement. I'm just saying he's got to be. We got a lead late game, best outfield out there. I believe whoever it is next year that's going to be the new general manager and manager. Like to me, watching that game yesterday, Yiner Diaz has to stop becoming a. Well, he can have a night guy. He's got to stop being a one-off guy. Like they've got to figure out a way to get the best out of Yiner Diaz.
Yeah, I think you got a couple of those.
I think he's got to be a priority in figuring out. All right, what is the best thing? Now I told you what I think. They didn't get his ass up out of that catcher spot. I know he threw somebody out yesterday at second base before the text line gets me. But they need to get his ass up out of there. Now I don't know if he goes play first base, whatever. They need to get him from behind the plate because if we're listening to what Jim Crane talked about yesterday when he was talking about his philosophy and if he can still do things the way he's done things lately, which is, you know, hey, not giving out big crazy free agent deals, not signing real long-term deals. And he responded with, I think we're watching some pretty good teams that don't have big payrolls have success. Some certainly we are studying very hard. Then we do spend money. But like if you're gonna be this team, like you gotta make some of these guys work. And you got a guy who in 2023 hit over 280, 23 homers, OPS 846 in 104 games. Backed it up the next year, hitting 300, 16 homers, 84 RBIs in 148 games. Hell, last year, 256, 20 homers, 70 RBI. He should be the right-handed hitter with Yordan, to pair with Yordan. That's what we thought he was going to be, and they have got to figure out the best way to get that out of him because they're not paying people. They got 3 years of control of him. They got to figure that out. But now he can't even play after he hits two home runs.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I agree wholeheartedly with you. But you got guys that can't even just well, they can't wake up in they can't wake up in New York and go, hey man, the kid's clearly seeing it well. He's clearly feels good at the plate. He's got a ton of confidence, man. Let's give him some more swings. Again, this you're not dealing with the Astro lineups of old that you're. You know, you're pulling out. I mean, you're literally putting in. And look, Vasquez is fine. But to your point, we're really talking about Trammell and we're talking about some of these other guys.
You could
massage the lineup in a way that it doesn't take Vasquez out of the catcher position. I just don't get it. I hate this about Joe Espada.
You had to have 9 runs. Like, listen, I ain't gonna say. I mean, we all know that last night's not sustainable. You go just keep falling down and giving up leads and having to fight back. They needed 9 runs. And he was a huge part of that.
Come on, Joe!
I'm just saying, this is asinine to me. Maybe some, you know, baseball people, no, that's not big of a deal. They had a game plan. No, this is crazy to me. He's got to play again today.
Mm-hmm.
Not with the other options. Not the other guys you're throwing up against the wall. He's got to get in the lineup today. Christian Walker, he could take a night off. Vasquez can take a night off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pete, you're going to have to get it together. I don't care how much you want to throw it to him. It's not like... You're going to go more than 5 anyway. I'm Peter. Sorry, Pete.
Get off Big Pete, man.
He's been doing – I just –
Hold on,
the best thing we had all year long. What the hell wrong with you?
They got to figure out how to get the best out of this dude moving forward. That's got to be a priority for the general manager and manager.
Should be a priority for the next 30 games.
That too. But definitely – well, the Joe ain't going to be here
They
should
have been involved in the meeting.
Well.
Here's what you got to do, Joe.
Joe ain't going to be here.
Cam and Yiner need to be in the lineup.
Wild to me. All right. B. Scott's going to join us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the big move that the Texans made this week, getting in a viable replacement for Jaden Higgins. Get his thoughts on that. Who's in trouble? Who might be in trouble on this roster? Notable names that could be in trouble of not making this roster. And maybe he could tell us the next time Tank Dell will play. We'll do that coming up next.
Houston, it's time to turn up the heat. From Hiram Clark to Lake Houston, breaking news, bold takes, trades, and trash talk, you name it. Get ready for the hottest sports talk in the city.
Holla at your boy.
The B-Block is hot on the drive.
All right, welcome in. It's Wednesday. B-Block is with us. The block is hot with Brandon Scott in here as we're getting closer and closer to this season starting. They had joint practice today in Charlotte with the Panthers and apparently just dominated their asses in a major way. When you got the head coach for the other team telling you how bad it was, that's
going back to the drawing board, waving the white flag.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Bryce said it wasn't very fun today. that's what got me. We can get into that a little bit, but the big move and the big news of the week with the Texans is we knew they got the injury to Jaden Huggins. Jaden Higgins. And obviously that was huge. And then it was even bigger when you start to hear the coaches talk about him, especially D'Amico, and talk about how important he is. Well, they go out and they make a move, an aggressive move, I would say, and they trade a young promising safety in Reed over to New England, and they bring back Kayshon Boutte. Your thoughts on the aggressive move that the Texans made to bring in a replacement for Higgins?
I thought they had to have it, and I'll be honest, like, after this Higgins injury happened, I didn't really like none of the options because I didn't know who was really available. Obviously, Kayshon Boutte's name had been thrown out there once we start kind of looking at the landscape, looking at who has a surplus at wide receiver. But without really knowing how available he was and how doable a deal was, I just didn't like any of the options, talking about grabbing guys off the street, some of the older guys, which they did do, brought in Sterling Shepard and Zay Jones. Didn't necessarily love that. And for as much as I've respected what the depth of the wide receivers have done in camp and in preseason, I didn't feel like any one guy could step into that role that you were expecting Jaden Higgins to fill or to serve in. So I thought that they were going to have to do something, or we were going to have to expect something outsized from somebody that was already on the team. Like Xavier Hutchinson, you got to really show your worth now. Tank Dell, the question of what is Tank Dell? When is he going to be ready? And Clint, by the way, you let Luke take a turn for me about Tank Dell. When is he going to be ready for violence? Luke got that.
Oh, was that you? I may have heard you say it. I've been giving him credit for a month.
I've said it with you and with Luke. So, but that was my thing. It's like, when is he going to be ready for violence? And we still don't have a great answer for that question.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a much more urgent question, obviously, once Jaden Higgins goes down. You go get Kayshon Boutte, and now that Tank question can go sit where it's been sitting the entire time, and whatever he gives you is luxury. And to the point that y'all have been making over the last couple of days, I think it's a good one. You do a couple of things. You replace, relatively speaking, the production that Jaden Higgins either had given you or was expected to give you. You can reasonably expect that from Kayshon Boutte. And then more specifically, that downfield threat that I think Ron was talking about maybe yesterday of like, man, they haven't had that.
That may be more important. I'm not saying, like I said yesterday, I don't know that he's better than Higgins. But that quality, that skill set, you talked about Fuller. You talked about that. They just haven't even had that as a threat, and I think that is a big potential if they use it.
Yeah. So that's my big thing is the big playability plus the production. I think he had 6 touchdowns last year, just like Higgins did, right?
13 games. Yep.
But then you've got that big playability, and then another big thing. And Clint, I know you appreciate this is the fact that he already knows the offense.
Yeah.
The learning curve should not be too steep. It should be relatively smooth from that standpoint. Having played in the system already. So all of these things kind of come together and just make perfect sense for the Texans.
What about, because this is the most fascinating piece of it. I didn't think the Texans would, I didn't think New England would trade a much needed piece, regardless of what you think of the player. I would think there would be other suitors that they would choose to do business with before they do it with the Texans. It was my thought. So I mean, hey, tip to cap to Nick for pulling it off. The fascinating thing with me about Kayshon Boutte is man, if I think the ceiling is a lot higher than what we've seen. Like I think he is a 1,000-yard receiver potentially. I'm not saying he's going to do it here because you're doing it with Nico Collins and Dalton Schultz and a run first offense and all that. But when he slipped in the draft and he came to the league, I thought, okay, this is a dude that in the right spot could give you like 1,000-yard type stuff. And so I've thought that in my mind. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard D'Amico Ryans kind of mention today, hey, you know, we think we can get more out of Kayshon Boutte, not just what we've seen him do. So
yeah, I 100% agree with that. And then another thing that I would say is specific to his role with the Texans, he has not played with a receiver as good as Nico Collins in his career, in his NFL career. Yeah. So I think that the opportunities that are going to be there for Kayshon Boutte. One of the things that I was focusing on with Jaden Higgins and that injury, and I think I mentioned this last week, is how, you know, Nico Collins is your coverage dictator and Jaden Higgins was the guy that's supposed to make you pay for said strategy against Nico Collins. Well, I think Kayshon Boutte can fill that role specifically, and then just the fact that he's been productive without playing with a guy like that. And Nico Collins, as we already know, is going to take up a great deal of attention. And I suspect that Kayshon Boutte and also C.J. Stroud, a guy that likes to chunk it deep, but haven't really had, A, the time to chunk it deep as much over the last couple of years, or the personnel with Tank Dell being in and out and mostly out of the lineup. So it does a number of things, the production, the deep threat ability, the familiarity with the offense, and then, of course, him not ever playing with a player the caliber of Nico Collins. I think you're going to be able to get a lot out of Kayshon Boutte.
Yep, that's the hope. But at the very least, like to me, like what Rashid Shaheed brought to the Seahawks, that fear of a downfield threat just that he was out there loosened up things for Jaxon Smith-Njigba and their offense. So, you know, the sky, the ceiling may be up where you're talking about as a 1,000-yard receiver, but at the very least, he is going to bring a fear. That is proven fear.
Look, it's likely that it's not going to happen because, I mean, it's just for a guy to jump into a system and all of a sudden, you know, skyrocket like that. But it's not crazy. I mean, look, he was in an organization that was hiring defensive coordinators as OCs at one point. Wasn't he there that year? And he was there for 3 years. Maybe he missed the Matt Patricia year.
Oh, you know, I don't know if he was there for that year.
He didn't get a Matt Patricia year with Belichick's last year there?
He's been there a few years now, so he might have. He's
been there 3 years, so I think he may have.
Yeah, I think he did. But to the point that you're making, just think about the fact that you can even make that point about him. Who was the receiver that the Texans had before, absent of Jaden Higgins, obviously, that you could even said that about? Like, honestly, like, I think this guy's got 1,000-yard potential.
Yeah.
It just was not there outside of Nico Collins. Of course, Tank has that as well, but you don't know what you're going to get there. So just that you could even say that about a guy that they've added, or they've added a guy that you can say that about, I think speaks volumes.
You cover this team, B. Scott, here with us on the drive, as he is every Wednesday. Any notable players, if we're getting closer to the end, any notable players that you think may be in trouble of making this team?
Yeah, I got to look at the offensive lineman, and I hate that what happened to Braden Smith happened to him today. Yeah. But I'm very curious to see I know he's being evaluated for a foot injury. But he already looked like he was sort of competing for a spot that I think when he got signed here, a lot of people had already kind of penciled him in for and just assumed that was going to be your right tackle. So there's a question there. But the big one is Wyatt Teller, right? Like, Wyatt Teller is the name, the former All-Pro, one of the, what I thought at least, was one of their marquee signings outside of David Montgomery. And I think I was even making the case that he was their most important signing of the offseason just because left guard had been such a turnstile and such a disaster, if we're just being real about it, a disaster for years now, years. And so I thought that they finally had found the answer, assuming that Wyatt Teller was going to be healthy and extra motivated for how things ended in Cleveland. And it could just be the case that Buddy ain't got it no more. Or at the very least, the guy that they drafted in Keelan Rutledge is a better guard and something we've been talking about from watching practices. he might be their best offensive lineman, period, already. Now, that's tough to say considering he hasn't played a real NFL game yet. But based off of what we're seeing right now, that's not a crazy claim or a crazy thing to say about Keelan Rutledge. And certainly one of the better guys, the best guy on the interior. So whether it was him playing center or guard, you figured he was going to have to play. But to your question, Ron, I mean, it's turned out that Wyatt Teller could be like this year's version of Lakin Tomlinson. Him and Braden Smith could have been this year's version of the combination of Lakin Tomlinson and Cam Robinson, guys that you brought in.
They made it to the season, though.
Yeah, well, but
sort of.
It could be that you learn your lesson. Like, let's not fiddle around with this thing when we know and we can see in training camp that they can't even play with our young guys, that they can't even make it through training camp truly. So Wyatt Teller is the main name for me out of guys that I was expecting to be a big part of this team that may not be on the team at all.
All right, before we get you out of here, what's your feel? What's your feel on Tank Dell? Tank Dell, they're like, it's hard not to look and feel like, was there some sort of a setback or something? Because he was rolling, and then they have halted it. Now they bring in multiple receivers, including trading a valuable, you know, member of their team and a draft pick to bring in Booty. Do you got a feel of what's going on with Tank Dell when we may see him?
If it's not a setback, then they clearly changed their plan with him midstream somewhere or decided to dial it back. Like, I got a hard time believing that it was a part of the plan to throw him out there in practices a little bit and then to completely withhold him from there. Right. My ears first perked up last week when he didn't really participate at all in that Raiders joint practice. He was actually out there. People have said he wasn't out there. He was out there, but he was out there with a muscle shirt on and some sweats and walking around with the McNair kids and that type of thing. Right. Like, he wasn't participating. Might as well not have been out there. And so it is an odd thing if there wasn't a setback. And of course, it's a discouraging thing if there was. And so if you had asked me this a week and a half, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, I would have felt really encouraged. I was optimistic, actually, that Tank Dell was not only going to be back, but perhaps be ready to play.
He's not playing against Buffalo.
Well, we see the workout videos. It looks like he's moving fluid. It looks like he could be Tank, and then he's not out there. So it's definitely been kind of a yo-yo type of feeling, like up and down. And no, I don't have a great sense for when we're going to see him. But if you were to hold my feet to the fire right now, I would guess that he starts the season either on IR or pup list or some kind of something to that effect, which would be really discouraging and disappointing because everybody is rooting for Tank, on top of the fact that just having him would add a whole nother dimension to this offense.
That old Instagram life ain't always real, is it?
It's not. I thought that him running routes against Azeez Alshire and company was real.
Yeah.
Well,
I expected by now, kind of to your question, I expected by now to have an answer to my original question, which was, when will Tank Dell be ready for violence? And I don't know the answer. I don't know if they know the answer, right? And so without that, it's hard to predict when we might see him.
Well, we know we're about to be through three preseason games, and it has not occurred.
And it makes you, you are doubtful that they would throw him out there having seen no action in the joint practices, no action in preseason, and even being dialed back at practice. Kind of hard to believe that he'd go out there and be ready for week one or week two or week three, for that matter.
That's Brandon Scott every Wednesday with us, 4:40. Coming up, 5 o'clock fire. We got you covered. We get you ready for the big events coming up tonight. That's next.